When you're looking for a new computer or need help with one you already own, call 231-8000 and Madison Computer Works will get things up and running for you. Madison Computer Works, computers that work for you.
Similar to a well-tuned automobile, a guitar requires the same level of attention to perform at its very best. No matter how expensive your guitar may be, we will treat you and your instrument with the utmost respect. Call 920-723-1733 or visit jeffsguitar.com. Jeff's Guitar Clinic in Fort Atkinson, we love guitars.
Welcome to another podcast. It's LizaOffice.com, brought to you by the United Steelworkers. Joining us now, State Senator John Erpenbach from the 27th District, which is in South Central Wisconsin, for those of you listening outside the state. John was elected to the State Senate in 1998 and has been reelected since and is running again in a district that has been changed over the years quite a few times. John, thanks for coming on the show.
Hey, thanks, Clyde.
Yeah, it's a little different configuration than the one you were first elected to.
Yeah, it's actually real different. In the last redistricting cycle we had, the 27th Senate District actually had the most amount of growth as far as population goes. And so you would tend to think that in that case, the district would geographically get a little smaller. It actually got a little bigger. But that's what redistricting does. But yeah, it's changed quite a bit.
The two key issues in your reelection, are they education and healthcare?
Yeah, education, healthcare, and I'd also put transportation up there.
Okay.
Healthcare and education are, you know, neck and neck. We need to make sure that people do not lose their pre-existing conditions. And despite what Governor Walker is saying right now, where he says that people will be covered with pre-existing conditions, the governor has joined a lawsuit through his attorney general in Texas to basically get rid of insurance companies having to cover pre-existing conditions. And then, obviously, K-12 funding, making sure that it's fair, trying to get more money in there as best as we possibly can, because that, you know, with all Wisconsinites, that's number one priority, is making sure that our kids at least have opportunities, no matter where they live, at a good quality education.
What are there any school districts in your district that are having problems because of the Walker cuts?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, there are. And actually, it's interesting because if you take a look at Middleton Cross Plains, and then you take a look at Wisconsin Heights, which is Mays Own Black Earth. Middleton Cross Plains, the curriculum and the opportunities that the kids have there are great. Wisconsin Heights struggles, and they've had to go to referendum after referendum, just essentially to keep the doors open. So as far as the cuts to K-12 education, they have certainly hurt. And, you know, we always used to look at these studies where our schools and our kids always ranked, you know, 1, 2, 3, or 4, depending on what measure you were taking a look at, but now they seem to be, the kids aren't struggling obviously as much as the administrators are in trying to put together a budget, and I think it really devalues exactly what a teacher does when you basically make them the enemy of the state and you cut their pay and all of that. So, yeah, there are districts struggling all over the state, and it shouldn't be that way. It really shouldn't.
Yeah, you know, I understand. Both of our mothers were teachers, so
yeah,
we kind of understand the value of teachers.
Yes. Yeah, and teaching, you know, it's a tough thing. I mean, everybody thinks, well, they have summers off and they, you know, they're done at 3 o'clock. You know, that's just simply not the case. Teachers work very, very hard. There's a lot of hours and preparation that go into a classroom every single day that people don't see. There are teachers who are spending money out of their own pockets to buy the supplies that they need because the district doesn't have them, or some parents may not be able to afford them for their kids. But teaching is difficult. You know, you and I know a lot of stuff. Could you teach a class on radio to high schoolers? Probably not.
Can you imagine?
Oh no. I know a lot of stuff about government and how it operates and politics and all of that stuff, but teaching it is a totally different thing. And teaching, I think, is, you know, based on the teachers that I've known throughout my life and the teachers I've had, it's a real passion. You know, it's a real calling to do something like that, but that doesn't mean that you need to be poor. That doesn't mean that we need to treat teachers as second-class citizens, as the governor has.
What has happened is a lot of teachers that had experience retired because of Act 10.
Oh, yeah, and it's not just teachers. Yeah, there's a lot of experience that walked out the door, whether it was teaching, whether it was at the DNR, whether it was in corrections, wherever. Act 10 was, You know, I think Act 10 has been pretty devastating to the middle class to begin with. But secondly, Act 10 really devalued the idea of public service and making a career out of being a dedicated public employee. Again, some of these jobs, a lot of these jobs are really difficult, and most people wouldn't want to do them. But, you know, anybody who's in public service, you know, it's a real passion to do it. And when you devalue that, you not only devalue the individual, but it also goes after the quality of life as a whole in Wisconsin when, you know, people like the clean environment, they like good roads, they like strong education. All adds to the quality of life. But when you get rid of public employees whose job it is to make sure that the environment is clean and our schools are good and so on, when they start walking out the door.
Well, you and I have both spoken at rallies where there are correctional officers, and you have correctional officers in your district. The problem in the corrections department was exacerbated by Act 10 as well.
Well, yeah, and, you know, everybody thought Act 10 was all about money, and it actually it wasn't. In a correctional officer situation, it's about working conditions. It's about staffing levels. It's about making sure that not only when an officer punches in that they're walking into a safe environment, but they're not forced into another round of overtime because, you know, you're short staffed. My job as a state senator and representing the constituents I represent, my job is to be able to listen to what they're saying and what needs to be done as opposed to me telling them what needs to be done. And when you have a governor who has not set foot in one prison and doesn't see the value of going in and talking to correctional officers and learning about what they do and how they do it and how stressful it is, he's not doing his job. So, again, you know, just on the correctional officer side, and I have quite a few who do live in my district, it's an extremely difficult job. And the number of assaults, especially the hardcore assaults on officers, have gone up since Act 10's come into play, and a lot of that has to do with staffing levels not being where they need to be.
Your opponent, Casey Helbach, has said he's running because you're a career politician.
Okay.
What is wrong with Bill Proxmire or Gaylord Nelson or Russ Feingold or John Erpenbach or anybody else, Jen Schilling, dedicating their life to public service?
Well, first of all, I wouldn't put myself in that category. You're talking about you're talking about the great ones who.
Well, I'm just talking about people that have stayed around for a while, right? That were in it for a while.
Yeah, and it's not so much a career because every 4 years, you know, people have an opportunity to look at somebody else if they want to or vote somebody else into office. And the idea of being able to represent an extremely diverse group of people in the 27th Senate District and listen to all views and all opinions, whether people like me, don't like me, agree or disagree with me, isn't the point. The point is you need to be able to work with anybody and everybody. And if people think I do a good job in representing them as best as I can, then you get reelected. If they don't, then you don't. So the idea of a career politician, you know, and you know me, Sly, it's not the only thing I've done in my life. I've always had and continue to have jobs outside of, you know, being a state senator. So, no, I don't, you know, if people wanted to make a change, they certainly can make a change.
So he's proposed term limits. I've always opposed term limits because I think they take choices away from people as opposed to giving people more options. What would happen if we did what Ohio and California and some other states have done with term limits?
Well, here's what I think would happen with term limits. There are certain groups who would tend to become, the, for lack of a better term, the power base of the Capitol in Madison, and it would be lobbyists. It would be bureaucrats and so on and so forth who actually end up making decisions because if, you know, I know, for example, I'm coming up on my term limit time and so do the lobbyists and so do the state agencies that I'm working with, the idea of a legislator's vote making a difference in the end may not make a difference because they'll just wait for the next person who's coming in. So, and like I say, every 4 years in state senate, for example, or every 2 years in the state assembly, there's an opportunity to make a change. So in a sense, we may already have term limits in the fact that people want to make a change, they make the change. So
you know what happens in Ohio? when somebody finishes their term limit as a state senator, they just swap with the state house people, flip, and go back and forth. So they've played a little game.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, there's that in other states. You know, it's you know, when the old term up and out, up or out, meaning you're going to run for a higher office or you're going to lose and you'll be out, takes on a whole new meaning in the fact that, okay, well, I'm coming up on my term limit, so I'm going to run for something else. So, again, it's a situation where you can have the term limits, but the legislator or the state senator may end up in a totally different seat, but still in the legislature as far as whether it be a senator or a house or you know, that kind of thing. So, but again, it's one of those situations where the idea of power and representation needs to be spread out as opposed to consolidated. And when you do term limits, you actually end up, you know, inadvertently consolidating power more so with administrations and with the lobby corps. Because again, if they don't think they need to deal with you and work with you on legislation with the groups that they represent because you disagree with them, they're just going to wait for the next person to come into office.
How has the state senate changed since you were elected in 1998? Beyond who controls it, beyond the partisan divide?
It is, it's less tolerant. It is less deliberative. It's less of pretty much everything that made the Wisconsin State Senate what it was. And I'm not saying that because the Republicans have the majority. I'm saying that simply because the other side just doesn't listen. They don't need to deal with you. They don't need to take suggestions or amendments on legislation, even though they know that those amendments might make the legislation better. And even though they may agree with the amendments, that you know it's not a situation where there is input at all from the minority party, and a lot of that actually has to do with, you know, I think Act 10 was part of it, but I think all of it really has to do with redistricting and the fact that when you make Democratic seats more Democratic, and you pack Republican seats and make them more Republican, there's less choice when it comes to election time because of the numbers on the district, but it's also isolating. You know, it's really isolating, and the idea that congressionally we don't have nearly as many competitive congressional seats as we used to, that's because of redistricting. And you know, it could be the same thing with the state legislature and the Senate and the Assembly, is because of redistricting we have less competitive seats, because if you just take a look at the numbers, it's hard to argue with numbers.
Do you miss having more diversity within your caucus as far as political thought? You know, there used to be more conservative, or at least culturally conservative senators like Baumgartner from Sheboygan, you know, in the state Senate.
Yeah. Well, you remember, you know, the Kevin Schabilskis and the Lynn Edelmans constantly going at it, but they were in the same caucus. And the same thing with Jimnett Baumgartner that you just mentioned. That yeah, you know, he tends to be more conservative. I've always thought that Democrats, on the whole, whether they be liberal, moderate, or conservative Democrats, represent the majority of the views of the people of Wisconsin. I've always felt that. And I think if you take all the money out of politics and you just debate the issues and you don't distort and you tell the truth, I would tend to think people probably would vote for Democrats, you know, that's at least what I think. But, you know, diversity within a caucus is extremely important, because there are people from parts of Wisconsin, obviously, I don't represent, but they represent the views of the majority of the folks in their district. And it's important that whether I agree with them or not, I listen to what they have to say in caucus, because my vote has an impact on what's going on up in northern Wisconsin, just like their vote has an impact on what's going on in southern Wisconsin. And the only way you're really going to be able to not only represent your district, but represent the state as a whole, is to be able to listen to people and work with people within your own caucus, or even not in your own caucus, who don't necessarily agree with you all the time.
We'll take a break. We'll talk more with State Senator John Erpenbach from the 27th District here at SliceOffice.com.
Injury lawyers Mike Riley and John Walsh.
When you hire a lawyer to help you with your personal injury, you want to know that you'll have that lawyer's personal attention. With John and I, that's exactly what you'll get. With many firms, the lawyer that you see in the ad is not the lawyer who's going to be representing you in the case.
One of the differences with Mike and my practice is that when you hire us, you'll have us personally involved in your case.
Call injury lawyers Mike Riley and John Walsh at 257-5661 for the personal attention you deserve.
Welcome back to SlysOffice.com, brought to you by the United Steelworkers, Madison Teachers Incorporated, Madison Firefighters Local 311, and our friends at the Madison Teamsters Local 695. Let's talk a little bit about the Democrats and their chance to retake the state Senate. Does that exist? Is there still a chance of that in 2018?
Yeah, there is. And we're actually competitive in seats we haven't been competitive in a long time. And a lot of that has to do with what's going on nationally, I think. Some of it has to do with obviously the direction of the state. I think Foxconn came into play on this in some seats as well. But, you know, we're competitive in the 5th Senate District, which is suburban Milwaukee, which is Lee Wupner's Senate seat. And we're competitive up in the 19th, which is Roger Roth's seat, and that's up in the Fox Valley. Chris Marion down in the 17th is really given Howard Markline a run, and that's in southwestern Wisconsin.
Well, you know, I've gotten to know her a little bit. We did an interview with her. She is great.
Oh, isn't she something?
She really is. I mean, she is that district. Unfortunately, the Democrats had kind of a brutal primary in 2014, and then there was a recount, and you know, it just didn't
right.
It didn't work out. But boy, I tell you, Chris Marion has sort of pulled it together.
Yeah, and the issue she's talking about, and the issue she's running on and really cares about, not only fit that district, but fit a lot of what Wisconsin is having to deal with. You know, rural broadband is extremely important. You know, there are parts of Dane County that don't have access to broadband. And she takes the same approach I do, that it's sort of like the Rural Electrification Act back in the 30s or whenever that was, that no matter where you live, you're going to have electricity. And it should be the same thing with broadband. No matter where you live, you should have broadband. And she's talking about Main Street businesses. And if you take just a fraction of the money that we gave Foxconn or are giving Foxconn, and you spread that out into smaller towns around Wisconsin, and what that would mean for the rural economy, you know, it'd be huge. So she's campaigning on stuff that I think are perfect for that district and the state as a whole.
What do you make of this Kimberly Clark situation? Now, obviously, you know, my friends at the Steelworkers really are hoping that Kimberly Clark doesn't pull out of Wisconsin. They've made concessions. You know, we've had a lot of losses in the paper industry because of globalization and computers and that sort of thing. What do you make? It looks like there's going to be a special session. What do you hope is the final product to keep Kimberly Clark in Wisconsin?
Well, I hope the final product, first of all, is fair, and it does actually keep the jobs here. But in the end, you know, what Kimberly Clark is doing is what any corporation would do. You know, they saw what Foxconn is getting, and they want the same thing. You know, I'm not blaming Kimberly Clark or corporations, because that's, you know, Sly, that's what they do. So it's a situation where the governor, you know, basically, I think he talked before he should have. And there was an opportunity to deal with this situation toward the end of this last session. And Roger Roth, whose district is directly affected by it, Kimberly Clark, actually ended up killing the bill and not moving it forward. you want the good jobs, and you want family-supporting jobs, and this is what we're talking about. But then again, there's absolutely no guarantee, and there never has been. Like Foxconn, for example, that there are going to be those number of jobs, and they're going
well,
to be
we know that there's about a fourth of the manufacturing jobs Foxconn promised that are actually going to come to fruition.
Right. So in the end, it's a situation where you want this to be fair, you want this to be affordable for the taxpayers, you absolutely want to keep the jobs, but what the Republicans are proposing right now, without any real debate or any changes or anything. Even though we haven't really seen the final product, you know, you're catching wind of what it might be. It's reckless. And again, there's absolutely no guarantee. And that's another thing with corporations as a whole. You know, when unions go to negotiate, there's concession after concession because they want to make sure the company is healthy, because if it's not, they won't have a job. And then when all is said and done, sometimes these companies just pull up stakes and leave town. And that's always been a real frustrating thing in trying to deal with corporations and tax breaks when it involves union jobs.
It seems to me that we ought to have a manufacturing strategy in this state rather than just a carte blanche manufacturing tax break and agriculture tax break. You know, paper industry, so important to Wisconsin. It's such a part of our heritage. I loved Dave Hansen and some of the other Democrats that came up with the idea of a paper fund to help some of these factories convert to the type of paper that's being used in the 21st century. And because of Amazon, they may be driving retail out, but they are driving the cardboard industry. So there are great opportunities out there. We need a strategy and a plan, and it seems like the governor's been asleep at the switch on this one.
Yeah, the governor's always keeps his eye on the unemployment number, but does not pay any attention to what those jobs pay. And I call them walker jobs. When you have to have two or three walker jobs, to make ends meet, something's not right. And so Dave Hansen comes up with really good ideas. Others have come up with really good ideas. It's not so much the manufacturing, but it's getting the plant up to where they need to be competitive and deal with whatever new economy might be out there or on the horizon. And rather than just hand out $100 million to Kimberly-Clark, you know, what can we do to help with your facilities? What can we do to make sure that not only is the workforce strong, but there are people coming behind those who are getting ready to retire? And we haven't really taken a step back and taken a look at the big picture. It's always been more of a triage type of a situation. Well, this company needs X amount of dollars.
It seems reactive. It seems reactive.
Oh, yeah. It's extremely reactive. And you know, and the legislature and governors as a whole, you know, we tend to be reactive to what's going on currently, but we still need to take a step back. And it's not just the manufacturing industry. It's the startups, for example. We suck when it comes to startups in Wisconsin, and it's because we haven't taken a step back to take a look at the big picture to not only deal with the workers and make sure that we can get them what we can get them, but also deal with the companies and try and help them get ready for the new world that's out there.
The whole tenor of this fall's campaign nationally and the Kavanaugh hearings and everything, do you get any sense that the blue wave is still coming in Wisconsin? You were recently up in, if I'm not mistaken, you were up in the Green Bay area and the Door County mm-hmm. area helping your colleague Caleb Frostman, who won a special election earlier this year against arguably one of the most extreme members of the assembly, Andre Jacques. Do you get any sense that it's going to be tougher to hold on to that than before the Kavanaugh hearings? Do you think things are changing in Wisconsin? Are you worried there's a resurgence for the Republicans?
Well, the Senate district is difficult to begin with. It's been represented by a Republican forever. And you're right, Caleb did a great job, and he's a phenomenal candidate, and he's going to be a great state senator. But in a general election, it's going to be more difficult to hold on to. But I think Caleb is in a pretty good spot right now. I'd rather be Caleb Frostman than Andre Jacques up in the first. I tell you what, the enthusiasm is real on the Democratic side. Volunteers are turning out. They are able to take care of shifts in campaign headquarters, whether it be, you know, canvassing, making phone calls, that kind of stuff that we weren't able to do a couple of years ago because the enthusiasm really wasn't there like it is now. I think on the Kavanaugh hearings, the way Mr. Kavanaugh conducted himself in the questioning of some of the senators on the Judiciary Committee was appalling. And the idea that the president is just out and out dismissing sworn testimony, and the idea that, you know, this was never about whether or not he drank. It was about whether or not he lied to Congress in the end.
Which, well, we know, you know, he lied to Congress on a number of issues,
right.
Even before he was nominated for the Supreme Court, when he was nominated to be a federal judge, he told some fibs.
And right there, that should be disqualifying, right there. That's game over. But the polarization, you know, what we see going on, whether it's the Trump administration or the Walker administration, is essentially the same coming out of the same playbook, that all you're concerned about is 50.5% of the people that you want to represent. And the other 49.5% of the people, you know, it's whatever, you don't need them, so you don't need their vote or anything. And the idea is that when you govern, whether you're a president or you're a governor or whatever the case may be, is you represent either a nation or a state. And it's not just your supporters. You have to try and work with everybody, and neither one of them have done that.
Well, I would argue that because so many white males now vote Republican and so many more women now vote Democratic, I would argue that the governor and the president's policies in many cases have not been particularly helpful for blue-collar white males. That tax bill was terrible. The divide in the country is broken down now. And, you know, you and I are kind of a rare breed in that we're, you know, white males in our 50s and we're still Democrats.
Right.
The Democrats cannot completely be shed all male voters.
No, and the policies are, it's a totally different animal too. But in the end, if you take a look at Congress, for example, or the U.S. Senate, it doesn't even come close to representing the diversity of this country.
Well, it's very
true. It should be reflective. You know, the idea of a state legislature is if you slice the middle of Wisconsin open, you know, the state legislature should pop out because that's supposed to be what Wisconsin looks like. You know, we have 7 women in our caucus now, and it's great. And I think we have 4 or 5 women running in competitive races around the state, and that's great because it's more reflective of as to who we are as a state. And when you get a better reflection of the state in the state legislature, the policy is going to change, and the policy will be more reflective of what the state wants as a whole. But right now, you know, that's just not the case, especially not the case out in Washington.
How concerned are you? Final question here. How concerned are you that voter, you know, we know that Republicans are doing things in Georgia and North Dakota that are trying to disenfranchise minority voters. How concerned are you that Wisconsin's voter ID laws and some of the efforts the Republicans have made to suppress the vote are going to deter people from having a chance to vote in 2018?
Well, you're always concerned about that, especially with the policies that have passed here in Wisconsin. The idea is, you know, the Republicans' game plan was the long run of the fact that if we can't get people to vote for us, let's get the people who don't vote for us, let's make it more difficult for them to vote. And that's what they've done. I would hope and I would think that if I'm the person who's coming to a situation where it's more difficult for me to vote, ideally that would make me more determined to vote. But I don't know whether or not that's going to be the case. But it all comes down to if you don't like the direction of a country or a state and you don't like the policies that are becoming law and it's more difficult for you to vote, but it's still possible, you need to do anything and everything you can to get to the polls on Election Day and cast your vote.
Now, where do you live within the 27th Senate District now?
I'm in Middleton.
Okay.
The district, just so you know, basically stretches down by Barneveld, up toward Plain, and then up into Sauk and Baraboo, over to Portage, back down through Windsor, half of Oregon.
Oh, so you've got Congressman Grothman representing part of your district.
Yes, he does. And
he's got the race of a lifetime.
He's got his hands full. And I don't think a lot of people saw this coming unless you've met Dan Cole. When you've met Dan Cole, then you automatically know that Glenn Grothman has a race on it. So that's going to be an interesting one to watch on election night.
John Erpenbach, thank you for being a public servant. Thank you for standing up for working people. And thanks for coming to SliceOffice.com.
All right, anytime, Slice.
SliceOffice.com.
Thanks a million.
Bye-bye.
You know, we work hard every day. In mills and mines, hospitals and schools, in office buildings, pharmacies and shipyards, factories and forests, in squad cars, ambulances and taxicabs. We do all kinds of jobs in Iowa, Wisconsin, Illinois, and all across the United States and Canada. We build the things that build our country. We do things that keep our country going, support our families and our communities. We have the courage to stand up even when no one else does. We have the strength to fight for what's right, for our families and for yours. We're your friends, your neighbors, your sisters and brothers. We're more than 1 million members strong. We stand in solidarity with workers in every continent on the globe. We're the United Steelworkers Union, and every day we fight for you. Please join our fight. Visit usw.org or like us at facebook.com/steelworkers.